What's up, everybody? It is Tommy Runs here with Kafuzi, and it is Behind the Running Influencer Show podcast variation of the Relay podcast. Today we have Philly Bowden on, and we're going to talk to her about all things running. We're going to talk to her about all things influencing as well. And she's a real cool cat. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I've been following her for a long time, since before she really considered herself a pro and started making YouTube videos. She was in that sub-elite status. And since then, she's progressed quite a bit. Now she's running as a pro, but still doing the YouTube thing, still doing the Instagram thing. So for me, I feel like, for better or worse, depending on what person's perspective, I think it's for better. I think she's kind of the future of what professional running is going to be, and I know people have thoughts on that, but I feel like she's doing the running and in her way finding a way to tell her story that's relatable, natural to her, and fits within her workflow as a professional athlete.
Yeah, I really can't wait to talk to her, because, you know, balancing trying to get faster and better as a professional, but even as an amateur, it can be tough to also get some of that content that you want to get. So I can't wait to talk to her about, like, how she goes about all that. But then also, like you said, she tells her story in her way, which I think is extremely important, because when you watch her videos, you feel like, oh, this is 100% who she is. And I think that that's all the content that we all strive to make, is content that really feels like us and looks like us, so that when other folks watch it, they have more of a sense of like who we are as people. So I can't wait to get into it with her.
All right. Without further ado, here is Philly Bowden. Hey, Philly, what's going on? It's so good to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me on the pod.
All right. I understand that you just came. You're in Flagstaff now, even though you're normally based in the UK. You're in Flagstaff now. And you just came up from Camp Verde from a workout.
Yeah, I literally got back about 15 minutes ago, rammed some toast down my throat, and here I am.
Okay, good. Well, it's good to see you again. I've interviewed you on the Kafuzi Run Club channel, but it's good to see you here now for Relay. And I was especially excited to talk to you for our series on talking to running influencers, but you're also a running pro too, so you're kind of a double threat. But also, I think that hits well with our Relay audience. And I especially want to do it now, even though I know it's really inconvenient for you, because you have the Houston Marathon coming up. So I felt like I wanted to make sure we talked to you before you ran that race.
Yeah. Get the early scoop, right?
How is the training going so far?
How are you feeling? let's get into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the depths right now, and I feel like this point of marathon training never feels good. So if you can feel like okay, then you're doing good. So that's kind of where I am. The block has had a couple hiccups, because I feel like any marathon block does. Got sick kind of in between my two altitude stints. So started off with 5 weeks out in Font-Romeu in France, came home for 3.5 weeks, and then I headed out here. And I've been here for about 10 days now. And yeah, that middle period when I was at home was both in between altitude stints and just like dealing with the kind of that classic winter cold. But feeling on kind of back on my game now, which is good.
Now, this is your second time in Flagstaff for altitude, right?
Yeah, I was actually here in January of this year. I keep referring to it as last year because it feels so long ago. But yeah, started the year out actually in Flag for the month of January this year.
Okay. Now, the main thing that I remember from your last time at altitude, I think kind of like might be a great way to jump into kind of your YouTube side and your pro running side, is I remember you did a workout in Camp Verde and you had worn a GoPro to film the workout. And it just so happened that Olympic bronze medalist Molly Seidel was also doing a workout on that same loop that day. And it was maybe an awkward situation for you. How in the last year, looking back on that, Was it as awkward as it felt at the time, or what?
I need a recap.
Tommy, you didn't know about this story?
I need a recap, okay. And maybe hopefully I'm not the only one, but I need a recap, and I think some of the listeners might want to hear the whole story on this one.
So the way that my YouTube channel works is that Daniel tends to be the guy behind the lens, and he edits all of my footage as well. So I'm super lucky that when we're in the same place, I can just go and do my thing, do the workout, and he's there capturing everything. And it's a really easy kind of, two person attack on that. And for the whole time that I was in FLAG in January, I didn't have anyone really to help me film and stuff. So I was trying to think of ways to get creative with doing that. So I went to Walmart and bought a GoPro head mount for my GoPro. And it wasn't one of my finest decisions. I think you would definitely be in your right to say, like, maybe I should have focused entirely on the workout rather than doing the workout with also the camera on my head. My thinking was, it's just like wearing a hat, right? There's just a camera there. And I wasn't sort of playing up to it or anything. I was just filming the session. And then I voiced it over afterwards to kind of say how it went. Yeah, it didn't necessarily fly so well with my coach. And I didn't do it again after that. And I'm not sure I would want to. But I think it made for an interesting video. And that workout just so happened to be pretty awful. Like, I left part of my soul down in Camp Verde that day. A lot of people say that they've left a few Horcruxes down there, which is very accurate. But yeah, it was like an 8x K up and down the straight road. And I think Bowerman were there that day as well. And I was like, I'm just the most embarrassing person right now. But yeah, that was
so
that.
Like, out there looking like straight amateur, you know, like with the GoPro on your head.
Literally. And because the head mount was kind of like, it goes around here and then up the back. And in the GoPro is, I mean, it's not small. I have the Insta 360 now, which would have been so much more subtle because you could just put it kind of on your chest with a magnet. But yeah, not my finest moment. I'm
just picturing, like, you know how when it's like dark outside, people wear the headlamps. Like, I'm picturing, like, maybe people thought it was a headlamp and they looked at you like, why would she have a headlamp? It's like bright outside. Maybe that's what they thought.
Yeah. I think I looked like one of those like very deep sea fish that have like the kind of bubble thing over the head.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of sit in the embarrassment for the duration of that workout.
Yeah, but I feel like, though, in many ways, I feel like that was also a big transition point for you, too, because at that point, you were still very early, having switched and moved up to, like, kind of live closer to your coach and be with your current team. I think that was your first altitude camp. And so it kind of demarcated, like, all right, I'm more pro than I am YouTuber at this point. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think I learned so much from that camp. It was actually my second altitude camp, but I hadn't been to altitude since like 2016, 2017. So first one in a long time. And yeah, I'd been on the team that I'm on now, Team New Balance Manchester, for 2 months. So it was kind of like an intensive, we were all living in the same house together, 9 of us, for 5 weeks, which is as intense as it sounds. But I learned so much from my teammates and from those around me, just from like the stuff they do around training and kind of how they just behave like at different points of time, like around the week or like leading up to their goals and stuff, which was, I think, really valuable for me. And obviously I got to know them better as well. And I just felt like that whole camp, I was absorbing information from them as like being that kind of surrounding yourself with people that are better than you to kind of like let it rub off on you. And I think it, like you say, it kind of started that transition of me kind of feeling more like a pro athlete.
So how does, like, I just randomly thinking that, like, I mean, cause you do a really great job, obviously, which we'll get to, about the content creation and keeping that like aspect involved in everything that you're doing and even wearing a GoPro on your forehead. But like, how did that work with being in a house full of other people, other pros? How does that work with you getting your content then?
Yeah, I think it's a juggling act, and you have to be like respectful of those around you in terms of, like, you know, whether you're filming your surroundings when people are chilling, you're having breakfast and stuff, or like, you know, I totally accept that different people aren't as kind of open with sharing their workout details or like where their fitness is at as I am. So you have to kind of protect that in a sense. And I would never put like my teammates splits, you know, all over YouTube or anything like that. I guess like it's about communication. And it was a little bit of, I think I found it uncomfortable to start off with because I was still getting to know my teammates. So I feel like they didn't necessarily know me too well. And I didn't want to come in as like the new girl that's also got the camera out 24/7. But by the end of the camp, I think those closest to me kind of, they got it and were kind of quite lighthearted about getting involved and stuff. So Yeah.
And then there was quite a bit, I mean, like, almost kind of like a polar opposite swing in your last camp, because then you had Anya Culling coming up there with you and training with mm-hmm. you. And then, and that was really fun for me as a fan of running YouTube to watch, because I've been watching her channel and following her progress mm-hmm. as well. And then seeing you guys run together. And now it kind of like, was the sentiment from the rest of the team like, all right, here we go. It's like the YouTuber invasion now. Or are they like, all right, some people just are this way and that's their thing. Like what, how did bringing Anya in kind of change the dynamic there?
Yeah, I think being up in Font Romeu was totally different because I went solo kind of from my training group. And when I booked it, I expected to be completely on my own. And one of my teammates from my home club actually said that she was really keen to come out. So she shared my kind of ski chalet with me. It was like a studio. We had bunk beds in one corner, and it was probably like smaller than the living room that I'm in now. We were very on top of each other. Luckily we got on. And it just so happened that there were a bunch of Brits up there as well. And you know, people from all over. So we kind of just made this kind of like mishmash of a training group, and some Sundays there'd be like 20 of us, and then there was kind of this core group of about 6 or 7 of us girls that would meet for workouts, and we'd try and chop and change stuff so that everyone had company. And there was such a light-hearted, really genuinely supportive vibe that it felt like a really comfortable kind of safe space to get the camera out, and everyone was really up for it. Which was a lot of fun actually. And because it was at the start of this block, the whole kind of atmosphere around it was very kind of low pressure as well. So I think it was probably one of my favorite training camps that I've been on.
That's great to hear, because I feel like another question that I wanted to ask you about specifically today is, you recently had a really great result in Rotterdam. You came in third on a really tough day. I think that was a PR for you that day as well.
In Copenhagen, you mean?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Copenhagen. And
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
And I felt like that probably brought on a lot more attention on you, and also put a lot of pressure on you there too. Have you been able to sense that? Am I right on that? And kind of like, how is that factoring into the training?
Yeah, I think the pressure I feel a little bit less so. I mean, that was one of those days where everything just slots together. And I feel like you have to really, really appreciate those and kind of ride the high for as long as you can, because you don't get many of them, like in any career. And yeah, I mean, the response to the race video was fantastic. I really appreciate like how Daniel was able to bring that together, because I mean, all I did really was run the race. And he's kind of packaged this into kind of a lovely YouTube video that we have now as like a memory of that. But yeah, I definitely feel like it leveled me up as an athlete. And when you kind of take a chunk like that off your time, I think it was like 5 minutes something from my debut. You do feel kind of a little bit of a weight on your shoulders, because you kind of have that, like, I suppose, like improved ranking and then the expectation of the next one. But I feel like that's probably in line with like the healthy amount of pressure that I put on myself. So I find it, yeah, a positive thing.
Well, and just talking about like the day, but talking about like the day or the race, at what point like in the race were you like, okay, this is my day?
I think I felt really kind of anxious in the race for probably the first half, which is so stupid because I had a pacemaker that was literally for me, because no one else was running that pace. He's a British guy and he was fantastic, Matt, who jumped in last minute to pace me, and he did a fantastic job. But when he dropped out at about, I think, 21, 22K and sort of said, like, it's all on you now, within about 5 minutes, I then kind of relaxed a little bit. And I think it was because I'm kind of used to training on my own and trusting my own rhythm rather than kind of having to trust someone else. Mm-hmm. I think the moment I realized it was my day was when I realized I'd kind of started to pick the pace up, but felt like I hadn't, like felt pretty good. But I'm also very aware that like the wall can come at any moment. And all I had at that point was the experience of my first marathon, where with 10K to go, it wasn't good. Like, I was feeling very unwell and like yo-yoing between thinking I'm going to be sick and the pace kind of dropped off. So I was conscious that that moment could come. But when I got to about 2 miles, 2K to go, and that's when it started to hurt, I was like, oh, I can do that. This is hardly anything. So I just kind of had to grit my teeth then. So I guess around that time, and I was also interacting with the crowd, which I hadn't really done much before. So I think knowing that I felt good enough to even use a little bit of energy to kind of like G the crowd up, if you like, that's probably a good sign that it's going well.
Oh, that's a very good sign it's going well. Or that means that you're Kafuzi, because when he runs marathons, he gets the crowd really hyped. Like, if
as
I know you've seen
his videos.
As long as you
don't do that in like the first 10 miles, I think you'll, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like I was watching the Chicago marathon, like I was spectating, and I was at mile 2, and like there was this guy that came through and he was very excited and like hyping the crowd up at mile 2, and I'm like,
save
bro,
it,
you
dude,
got,
save it.
You got a little, I mean, he was jumping up and down like waving his arms like, bro, you got a little more time. Philly said, chill out. That's what I'm going to tell him.
That's 100%. Good advice. I could probably take some of that. I just get so happy when I'm racing. And so it's just fun. Now, building off of that that third place finish in Copenhagen, you've got Houston coming up in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. What are your goals there, especially as it ties into, like, you know, the UK doesn't have like a marathon trials like the US does. So like what's kind of the goal going into Houston?
Yeah, I think we're pretty set on the time I'm targeting being under the Olympic standard. We also have 5 women who have run that, and I think there will be a few more that will run that in the next couple of months. I also don't want to be kind of dictated by this kind of imaginary time that I need to run to make the team, because at the same time, yes, we don't have a trial, but there's also no guarantee that anyone will get taken, because the selection criteria is very subjective, in terms of they're looking for top 8 placing potential, and if they base that off rankings, then they're not taking anyone. But if they base that off kind of championship experience, then maybe it's a little bit more subjective. So yeah, I kind of want to just respect the last marathon time that I've run and what's realistic in this space of time to take off. So we're kind of thinking around the 225, 226 mark without putting like a specific pin on it right now.
And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I feel good about it. I think maybe like a month or so after Copenhagen, I'd have been like, ooh, another kind of 3-4 minutes as a chunk is quite scary. But at the same time, yeah, the Olympic standard is 226.50, which is basically 227. 10 seconds you can take care of in a mile or two. And that's like 2 and a bit minutes under what I did in May. And I feel like that's very achievable. So I'd like the A goal to be a little bit scarier than that.
And then how did you select on Houston?
So it was actually my second choice. I had wanted to do Valencia, and that's when I booked the Font-Romeu camp, because I would have come down 3 weeks before Valencia and spent my taper at home. But I couldn't get the entry that I wanted that would have meant I had bottles. So I kind of was guaranteed a sub-elite entry, which is basically just being on the start line behind the A elites, and I just wasn't willing to risk such an integral part of the marathon and kind of not having my fueling how I like to have it, as in just a drink on a table. So looked at the other options, didn't want to do CIM because the kind of net downhill aspect isn't legal for qualifying times, and yeah, landed on Houston being kind of 6 weeks later.
Oh, very cool. So you've never run a race where you've had to like grab the cup and like pinch it and drink it that way?
No, well, as in like,
because like in your debut marathon you had bottles, right?
Yeah. So I've always had bottles at the kind of like elite drinks stations.
So you've never had
to carry like 10 gels on a belt and pinch the cups. I have picked up water. I mean, Copenhagen was so warm that I was constantly grabbing water and chucking it over my head. I also threw a cup of High Five over my head about 3 miles in because I thought it was water. Got very sticky and was like, God damn it.
Oh, man.
That's early to make that
the
mistake.
The first drink station, I was like, I'm going to keep myself cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, at least maybe you smelled decent at the end because of it. You know, I don't know. Do you? She's like, well, maybe. What would you grade yourself like for the grab a cup, pinch and drink? Like out of a 10, one being like you almost die every time you try, and 10 being like nothing happened. I might as well have just picked up a bottle.
I feel like I'm maybe like a 6.5. Sometimes I'll get it all up my nose, and other times I won't have much to drink. But a lot of the time I'm just kind of chucking it on myself rather than trying to drink it. But then sometimes they do give you bottles, which is nice. Like, just I mean, the caps off.
Since you're so good at making like content, I'd love just one little segment of like one of your videos just to be going full speed, grab a cup, drink it, and then rate yourself. I would love that.
Okay, I'm going to make that happen.
I'd love that so much.
I'll get hold of some paper cups.
I think us amateur folks like want to know like how to do it better, because I've literally probably almost died at least 4 or 5 times in one marathon, you know, just from being so bad.
The advice is the pinch and spout kind of method, right? Rather than the regular kind of I'm drinking from this cup.
It's just like a little sip of tea. No, I don't think that works out well. Yeah.
I wonder if the people that are really good at it are also the people that can run alongside someone with an iPhone and look like they're on a bike or in a car because their hand is so steady.
Mm. Like maybe it's a vertical oscillation thing. Like if you're one of those runners that just like runs to the horizon, no
their
up
head
and down
move
movement.
At all.
Yeah, one of those people. Maybe that. I think I must be one of those like really up and down.
I think I'm a bit bouncier than that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's me too. Yeah, I'm glad we covered this in this moment. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's a good segue because it's like you're filming like a lot of the things that, and I think the big draw on your YouTube channel, which has seen tremendous growth, and on your Instagram, which has been exploding, is that like you're exceptionally fast, but you're also exceptionally relatable too, and like you are understanding all the things that the rest of us are experiencing, and you're able to be like, pro runners, we're just like you, in kind of a way that's just very enjoyable. How are you kind of like balancing, like, all right, like right now you're 3 weeks out from a big marathon, like how do you balance like, all right, what's on the content calendar and what's on the training calendar?
I mean training comes first. Mm-hmm. And I think the content is very kind of complementary to the training. Now that I have Daniel out here in Flag as well, he arrived a couple of days ago, it does make it a little bit easier. He's just following me around with the camera and I'm like, hey, edit this.
Okay, that's good.
It's much more friendly than that. I think I'm just very comfortable kind of sharing a lot, and it doesn't kind of necessarily worry me what people are going to think of what I share. Maybe that's why people find it relatable. And I find that I get a lot of enjoyment from it, and it makes me enjoy my training more. So I don't put like a huge amount of pressure on it. We kind of work off the training schedule for the videos, and then for kind of blocks like this, we'll work a little bit further in advance, kind of backwards. We'll know that the Houston Marathon will be the next kind of big race video, and we'll kind of work back off that and think, okay, what workouts am I doing? What else is happening? What sponsors have we got lined up? What can fit with which kind of sessions or like video ideas? And it's just become very intuitive. I think we found a good rhythm with it.
Who's managing all that part of it? Like lining up the sponsors and what those obligations are in terms of like, you know, sometimes you're doing a mid-roll ad read. Sometimes it's more of like a kind of a product placement, making sure that like you've got the gels in the video kind of thing. Like who's kind of like on charge of that? Is it you or is it Daniel, or how does that work?
It's kind of both of us, to be honest. Yeah. We both kind of stay on top of it. We have a like content schedule spreadsheet with the video titles and kind of concepts, and then we'll like line the sponsors up with that. A lot of the time you have to work a little bit in advance for maybe the sponsored segment to get them to sign off on it and make sure that you're not, I don't know, showing their brand in an unfavorable light that obviously you would never want to do. I think sometimes it can get a lot when, I think this time of year especially, sponsors are keen to kind of get stuff out before Christmas. And I think before I came out to Flag, we maybe took a little bit too much on in that regard. And that's a good learning experience to maybe just do 80% of our capacity rather than 100% in case life happens at the same time and you can't do everything. But it's both of us. We're such a good team together on it. And if one of us forgets something, the other one will remember. So it's kind of, I really appreciate that it's not just me. And I also massively admire people that, you know, it's just them. You see the content and they're also the person lining up the sponsors, doing all the editing. And you know, I think as you grow, it's naturally a good idea to maybe think about where you can outsource and bring people in. And we're starting to kind of get to that point now, I think.
Yeah, I hear you on that one.
Oh yeah, I'm over here smiling like, yeah, like it's tough to do like the balancing act of everything and then still get some good training in too, because sometimes you're feeling more creative than others and you want to like have some fun with the content, but then you're like, hey, I got to work out today, you know? I feel like it's gotta be, I was wondering if as a professional, and you have this base of all this content that you've made and you're doing great on all your different socials, especially, you know, following and subscriber wise, do brands that you already work with on a professional athlete level still approach you as like an influencer or creator to say like, hey, we have an idea and we'd like for you to do this with the product? Or is it more like, because you're a professional athlete, they kind of just say like, do your thing, and then make sure you're just not like embarrassing the company or something?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of the two. I think it really depends on the brand mostly. Some of them I think are more trusting, maybe after they've worked with you a couple of times and seen a successful kind of integration, they've had a good click-through rate from whatever kind of ad you had. And then those are my favorite kind of partnerships because they trust you to do your thing. And I feel like we know what our audience like and we know our audience very well. And it's always going to be better if we can kind of shape an ad into our usual style so that the audience are kind of clicking with it and enjoying it rather than it being very kind of heavily scripted or directed so that it kind of goes adjacent to that space, because then it kind of feels a little bit forced. But it's always a balancing act of the two. And I feel like we're getting more confident to kind of push back when we feel like maybe it's a little bit too directed or scripted, to say, like, trust us, we know what we're doing and we've been successful with this in the past, kind of, you know, let's try it this way and kind of find a compromise.
I mean, I think that's an ideal kind of relationship, right? Because like, you ultimately, to the extent that like, you know, ideally none of us would have to work with sponsors at all. You know, we would be able to just make whatever we feel like making. But, you know, at some point it's like, all right, well, if we bring on a sponsor, we can do this for a living and, you know, we can find a way to make it fun in our own kind of like language. And I feel like the brands that I enjoy working with most are the ones that came to me for me and not because like, oh, you have an audience, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we came to you for you, so we want you to do it in your way. You know, I feel like that's always the best way to work with it. Now, I understand from a brand's perspective, you can't always do that with everyone until you have that rapport and that understanding. But like, I just love it when people are like, yeah, go, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
We trust you.
I feel like it's like, sometimes you can tell if a brand really never watched your content before and they just see the number, or there's someone said, yeah, reach out, you know, because it's like, hey, we'd love for you to do blah, 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 blah. And I'm like reading it, cringing. Like, you must not have seen anything that I've ever done, because like, this is so the opposite of it. But I think that is really cool though. When a brand, you know, authenticity is like where it's at for anything. Like, so especially with somebody like you, it's like, let her do her thing. And if you want to work with her, here's how it works out. And here's, just watch any video and just imagine your product in here somewhere, you know?
Yeah. And two, I think it's important to never be too guided by the like opportunity or the kind of offer from a brand. Especially in that context, like sometimes you'll get an email and it'll be really clear they've never watched your content. I think we were approached by a brand that wanted us to work with some kind of a weighing scale for keeping on top of your weight and stuff. And I was like, this is just not a fit. Like, I don't think you've maybe looked at my content, and it's not sort of the sort of thing that I want to push, like, regardless of what you would offer to pay me. No thanks kind of thing.
Yeah, I've had ones where it was like, yeah, there are certain things that I specifically don't talk about on the channel, and I make a point of not talking about on the channel. So, I mean, like, you can't bring me a product that's that. Like, for me, like, I don't talk about, like, running for weight loss. That's not something that I've ever kind of made a big focus of the channel. I have lost a lot of weight from running, but, you know, it's something that I kind of avoid because I feel like it's a very potentially treacherous path to go down. And so, like, one of the diet companies was like, we'd love to work with you. And I'm like, I don't think that you guys have watched. And not that I felt like every company has to be like a super fan to be able to approach, but like that one was like a really bad fit for me.
It's like, just do a little research. And I think that that's what you said about not being guided by the opportunity is really big, Bimmy, because there's a lot of people hopefully like watching this that are like, that have, they're making content, they're trying to connect with brands. And very often it's like this, the opportunity can have us do things that we don't want to go viral for. Like I always say, like, I don't ever want to go viral for something that isn't me, because then you have to, either you have to replicate that or you lose the following that you went viral for, you know? So it's like, you got to do things that feel really right to you. And then to the people that, you know, the audience that has supported you, you know, up until that point. But I took the liberty of watching your first YouTube video. It was, I don't know how I
segue.
I don't know. I'm not sure where the segue was in that, but like, I think it's like the support, because I mean, it was just a year ago. I feel like, was it like just a year ago?
It would be 2 years in January.
Two years ago. Okay. 2 years. But it was very good. You know, like you had me on the edge of my seat for like a few minutes, no words, just like, the content has leveled up so much in the last 2 years, and it just seems so authentic. One of the things that I wanted to ask is, what made you start the YouTube channel? Because it wasn't necessarily the thing to do for like a pro athlete.
Yeah. And I guess back when I started it, I wouldn't say I was a pro athlete. I was kind of on that sub elite side of things, but I think it's always been at the back of my mind as something that I would enjoy back then, but I didn't have the confidence to just do it. And I didn't also know how, in terms of, okay, I film all these clips and then what do I just like put them together and how do I cut them and stuff, which is where Daniel came in. And he also was quite integral and kind of encouraged me to just make that jump and just do it. And I think the most important thing with that was not caring about what people think in kind of in general, especially when you're thinking about it and saying, oh, I don't want to put this out because what will my friend that I haven't seen or ex-friend from school think, that, you know, I used to care what they thought about me. And it's like, no, just be free, just do it. So why did I start? I don't know if I can pin it down to one thing, but as soon as we did start, I knew that I enjoyed it, and we hit a rhythm instantly of a video a week. And Daniel was very good about being measured with that, because he's the one that has watched a ton of YouTube, and he's like, let's be consistent, let's do it like one a week. And I'm like, all right, let's do it.
To build off what Tommy was saying, like these days a lot more pro athletes are building their own YouTube channels, and some are more consistent than others. What is your take on the whole kind of like pro athletes also need to be kind of like social media personalities, which seems to be something that feels natural to me, but there is a lot of hesitancy and a lot of kind of like resentment towards that idea as well. Where do you kind of see it?
I think you'd find it very difficult to completely resist it in like the current climate and where things are going. Like if you don't have any social media at all, you'd have to be, you know, Eliud Kipchoge kind of level, I think, to get away with it and still make a living. So I think there's a little bit of, even if you don't like it and it doesn't feel natural to you, make it your way of doing it. It doesn't have to be making a reel every day or making a YouTube channel, but sharing what you feel comfortable sharing and doing it in your own way. But I think it's kind of impossible to resist if you want to make it. Sort of financially with sponsors support, which we've spoken about obviously on the content side of things, but as an athlete, you know, it's difficult to do it without a sponsor behind you in terms of like a shoe sponsor. And also if you kind of develop an audience and there's good engagement with your content, then that avenue of sponsors opens up even more, which can make you, you know, more secure than if you were just relying on a shoe sponsor that's getting exposure from you just running races.
I listened to a podcast. It was with Aaron Luzzi. He was, I think he was like the head of marketing for like Red Bull at one point. And he calls it like the super athlete, where the athlete that is obviously the pro and does all, you know, knows how to get after it and do all the things and be great, but then can and does easily turn to, you know, sharing their personality and leaning into like whatever type of media platform. Like, as you said, like, it doesn't have to be a YouTube, you know, a 5 or 6 minute YouTube video. It can be a short reel, or it could be even writing or, you know, blogging or whatever it is, whatever way that you can share yourself with the audience. He called it like the super athlete because you have those both sides that makes it easier for potentially easier for a brand to latch on for like a longer period of time, because it's not just performance based. It's like, hey, maybe you didn't have the best race that you wanted, but as a brand, we see a big plus here because you're going to make a recap video, and you've been making videos all up until, and then will be after too. So I feel like you're like the quintessential like super athlete.
Speaking of New Balance, though, can you tell us what shoes you brought with you to Camp to Flagstaff?
Yeah, so I bought the 1080 V13s and the More V4s as my kind of easy day shoe that I'll rotate. Before about 6 weeks ago, I was a More V4 diehard, having switched from the 1080 V12, but then the 1080 V13 came out and all my teammates were like, you need to try them, and I love them. So I'm kind of switching between those two. And I also have the More V3 Trails, which are great just for the trails out here, and I quite like putting them on as kind of a bit of a firmer, higher stack shoe. And then for my workouts, I have the SC Elite V3s, and I have two pairs of the SC Elite V4 in different sizes, because I'm kind of trying to figure out what size I am, because I wore the 5.5s back home for some lactate testing on the treadmill and managed to get a blister. So I'm figuring out whether it was the socks or whether I can pad it up with the 5.5s, or if it's maybe the only shoe that I'm a half a size bigger. So it's great to have both so that I can figure that out while I'm here, because I would really love to race in them for Houston.
Nice. I don't have any pairs of the SC Elite V4. Tommy, do you have them already? You have them, right?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about what I have, and I absolutely love when I have a shoe that Kafuzi doesn't. That's like, and it doesn't happen much. You see the smile on my face right now. It's like I can't even hide it. I've got two pair, Mike.
What?
So yeah. So I had the I ran New York City in the all white ones with the like the silver.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I love those.
And I just got the new colorway, or not the new colorway, but the launch colorway. That's pretty.
Kind of like
really nice.
White, orange, and fluorescent.
Yeah, greenish. Yellow-y, yeah, fluorescent. Green. Yeah. I think what it is, Kafuzi, is that they're waiting until the next color, because they just like, nah, he won't like this one. I think it's a color. They're holding out till they got a better color for you.
Maybe. I got a pair of Rebels today though, but I.
Oh, nice.
But I can't show them to anybody yet. I don't know when
the new Rebels. Ooh.
I think it's January 9th, I think.
Is it okay?
See, if I had more space in my suitcase, that would be the extra shoe I would have brought, the old Rebels, because I like wearing a non-carbon shoe for some of my workouts, and I really like how squishy they are.
Which Rebel did you like the best so far?
I think it's the current one, like before the new ones that have come out, the one that are in that kind of like pastel blue colorway with the pink N. I love those. Yeah.
Is that the two, Mike?
No, that's three.
Three. Okay.
That was a fantastic shoe. Like, it looks like it's too like low stack height to take for a long run, but it totally can handle it. It looks like it's not really going to be built for a workout. Totally can handle it. It's great in a lot of conditions.
I'm aware of those
and
today.
It's squishy but also responsive. Like I mm-hmm. wore them for all my track workouts back home and last time we were here actually.
Ah, very nice. And then for Houston, you'll be racing in one of your two pairs of the S Elite V4?
Yeah, if provided I can do a workout where I don't get blisters. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to probably try the size 6 because I'm normally a 5.5. But I think a couple of people have said that my toes feel a bit squished in the 5.5, which is probably why I got a blister. Okay. So I'm going to pad up and try the 6s next week for a workout. But I also have them sending out a fresh pair of V3s just in case because I'm doing all my workouts in the V3s at the moment. So I'll have options. So I'll have shoes on my feet.
Yeah. Well, belt and suspenders, you know, no stone unturned. You're going to be okay for Houston. What about the nutrition? What's the nutrition plan for Houston?
In terms of during the race?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I have a fueling partner, which is OTE Sports. I think they only sell in the UK and Europe at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's a carb drink that's 80 grams in a 500 mil. So I'll split that between three and then have one of those at each 5K fueling station. And I tend to strap a gel to every other one just in case I've missed the bottle before that or I feel like I need to just hold on to a gel and sip a tiny bit of it. But yeah, in my first marathon, I took a gel with every other, I think I was having Morton at the time, with every other Morton drink, and that was overkill, for sure. Okay. Too much carbs.
I'm gonna ask a noob question here, because I've never had like the bottle situation before, and I don't anticipate that I ever will. So it's every 5K, so that's like 8 bottles.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, and it's like, what, like 12 ounces in each bottle?
Is that about right? Yeah, I think it's about like...
Maybe 10?
175 mil in British money.
Yeah, yeah. So somewhere around. But more than what would be in a little cup, right?
Yeah.
Does it feel like you're drinking the whole time? I just feel like if every 5K and how fast you guys are running, you must be like, you must have a bottle in your hand like half the race.
I'd say I hold on to the bottle for about like 400 meters from the 5K and get it down in like three goes. Okay. And I have these cool bottles that I got off Amazon. I think they're for watering like very small plants. So they kind of have, I don't think they're safe to drink from, but I don't care. Oh. Someone messaged me and was like, I don't think that plastic is safe. And I just said,
Are you like pouring out the chemicals that came in them and then putting your stuff inside?
I mean, I've rinsed them. So they're just empty bottles that you buy from Amazon. So yeah, it's not plant food in there or anything. Maybe that would help. Who knows?
Yeah, pouring out wheat, weed be gone. Well, it might not be safe.
No wonder I feel sick sometimes. So they have a little straw that goes to the bottom. And then on the cap, there's like a hard spout. So you kind of just squeeze it and the liquid just comes out rather than having to do the kind of tilt and like, especially when the kind of traditional bottles are a little bit harder. So I found those worked really well in Copenhagen. They're a little bit smaller and a little bit easier to run with. And you can effectively, they're open and you can slosh it around and nothing will come out. So I use those and yeah, I don't think it feels like you're constantly drinking. I love how the drink stations break up the race because once you've had a drink, then you're like next 5K lock in. And, you know, sometimes I'll have a different goal or different thing to focus on for the next 5K of the race. And then I'll get my next drink and it's like a checkpoint, which I quite like. And yeah, I guess you just have to train your stomach a little bit, which like today when I had quite a big session, I'm practicing every 3 miles basically taking on fluids and sometimes it feels like it's sloshing around a little bit, but you absorb it pretty quickly.
Yeah, how long before the race do you start like practicing with like that type or that much fluid?
I try and do it for the whole marathon block, like if I can, once a week, because I get a lot of confidence from just having that part nailed and not having to worry at least how I will deal with the fueling. There's always a little bit of chaos at the bottle stations, maybe you'll miss one, but just kind of checking off that part of training and practicing with the drinks I like to do at least once a week. I think I've done it a little bit less in this block, probably just because I feel more confident about it from the last kind of marathon.
Another, like, I guess logistical question. Are you and Daniel staying in Flagstaff all the way throughout the holidays to Houston? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I'm sorry you won't be able to see your families over the holidays.
Yeah, I was kind of worried that they would be really upset with me, but they just understood it straight away, which was really nice. We're going to have a kind of pretend Christmas when we get back at the end of January. So
that's nice.
I'm glad he's out here with me anyway. We have a little Christmas tree here. So we'll do something special on Christmas Day. I'm not going to make a Christmas dinner or anything like that, but we'll go for like a walk or something, and it'll be a different Christmas, but it'll be fun.
And tell the whole family, just no one opens any gifts until January.
Yeah.
No one do
keep
anything.
The tree up. I don't care if it's bad luck.
Yeah. Exactly. Keep all the lights up, all that.
Yeah. Be that house.
a question too, like on the influencer side, random kind of bouncing around here, but like, what's your demographic look like? I mean, do you have a ton of like US followers over, you know, European followers? I mean, how does that work for you?
Yeah, it's I think it's been slowly evolving. The thing that I'm most happy about is that the gender split is working its way more towards even, because I just would love to have, you know, a 50-50 split, or even, you know, more women following and subscribing to my YouTube content as a female athlete. But I also know that YouTube is a very kind of male dominated creator space, and also I feel like it tends to be more of a kind of, a lot of men watch YouTube compared to women. I don't know why that is, but I feel like that's a trend. So I think on YouTube it's about 65-35 to those that have declared male or female, and then on Instagram I think I'm about 50-50 now. And then in terms of demographics, I think roughly like 30-40% on YouTube are US based, and the rest is, I think I've got quite a big chunk UK, and the rest is kind of dotted around from Germany, Australia, India, like all sorts of places. But also I think some people don't declare their location, so it never adds up to 100, which I find really confusing.
You mentioned something earlier, you know, a little bit ago about wanting and you know, your desire to have more women follow your, you know, your content. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on, like, what would you love for like young women and just women in general to take from your content?
I think just that running is for them. I feel like a lot of girls and women are maybe not encouraged into like any sports sometimes, you know, and running. And I think you can see that in, you know, there being more coverage of men's running, or, you know, the kind of participant gap where there's way more men running any given race than women. So I feel like I enjoy it so much and I get so much from it that I would hate for other people like me to miss out on that because they don't think it's for them. If they try it, they don't like it, then like find your thing. But yeah, I think that's the main thing, really.
That's a really great message, I think. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good place to leave it for today. I could talk to you for forever, but yeah. We all have time, and I'm sure you got to put your feet up. Do some sort of recovery routine.
I need a shower as well.
I was wondering what that smell was. You know?
But before we go, let's remind everyone that you'll be racing in Houston. So let's make sure we follow Philly and keep her on the tracker. And if we want to follow the build in the meantime, where can we do that?
Yeah, on YouTube and on Instagram. It's just Philly Bowden with the one L, unfortunately not spelt the same as the Philly cheesesteak. That would be cool if it was. Instagram and YouTube updates regularly.
All right, well, we'll be cheering for you. I'll be in Houston. I'll be running the half, so hopefully we can connect sometime there. But for everyone else, I know that they'll all be cheering for you, and good luck in Houston.
Thank you.
Good luck.